How long should I plan for this conversation? Is it an hour or
it's
half
an hour.
Hour?
An hour.
An hour. Okay. Sounds good. Mm-hmm.
So hi, it's Diane. It is Tuesday, May 6th with the 1 o'clock group. We've got Terry and Tamar so far. We'll have maybe some other folks joining us in a little bit. Because we've got a few new folks maybe listening to the recording, I just wanted to kind of start by sharing a little bit about the format Terry's new with our group. And so typically what we do as a group is we'll start by checking in, and that's everybody kind of just going around and sharing how things have been going since the last time we met and what you've been focused in on and what worked, what didn't, celebrations, that sort of thing. And then everybody in the group will take aim on a particular area. And so we talked about take aim in Sanity School. It's just a way to kind of get really specific on what are you thinking about and what are you focusing on as we have the conversation today. I'll do about 10 minutes of teaching on the topic for today, and then we'll talk as a group about the topic, and I'll do some coaching as we go through. And then at the very end, everybody will there's four questions that we answer at the end of every call, and everybody will kind of take a minute, write those down, and then we'll check out by having everybody share, you know, their thoughts and their takeaways from the call and what their commitment is for the next couple of weeks. So with that,
okay.
Which one of you wants to go first for check-in?
I can go.
Great. Thanks, Terry.
Sure. So, yes, I just joined, and so I have no prior experience as far as, you know, practicing any specific skills as a mom of a child with ADHD and a wife of a mother, a wife of a man with ADHD. So I am just, you know, my biggest struggle right now is in letting go and allowing my son to take over some of his responsibilities. He's 17, and I've been micromanaging and worrying and, you know, trying to prop him up. And so my biggest thing that I've been working on is to just to let him do his thing and trust that he will manage it. And
yeah.
Managing the anxiety around the failure. And then his main thing is schoolwork. He doesn't hand in assignments. And I just looked, he's got like, I don't know, 6 or 7 Fs because he didn't hand something in. And I have conferences today. So this is a good timing for the call. And we also have a 504 plan in place that we just got in place. That's a long story, but, you know, the school was not supportive of it 2 years ago. And then I kind of succumbed to their suggestions, and I just, it didn't work out really well. I tried to manage it on my own, and I finally pushed the issue, and now he has his 504. So anyway, so that's where I'm at. I'm just trying to, you know, figure out how to, like, I just texted him and said, I looked online, and this is what you have missing. Can you talk to your teachers after school today and see when you can catch up with these things? And he texted me back and said, I got it. I'm handling it, you know. So that's
yeah.
where, that's how I handle that, you
yeah.
know.
Well, and so
I'll point you,
Terry, if you're interested, I can send you to an article that I wrote about kind of how to handle it when your kid says, I got it. When your kid says, I got it, and you don't think that they do.
Oh,
so there's an article that
okay.
I wrote that's actually called that. But so I'm curious, when you finished Sanity School, what were one or two of your biggest ahas from going through those 6 weeks?
I just had one sanity session. I didn't have.
I'm sorry. I thought you went through our sanity school program. So you're.
No, I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I just had the one session just to see if the program was right for me, and then I signed
Got
up
it.
And.
No, I apologize because there's a lot of folks.
That's okay.
We just finished a 6 week program, and there's several people that are coming new to the group, and I thought you were in that crowd. So.
Yeah.
Cool.
No. I'm brand spanking new. So.
Awesome. Well, we're glad to have you with us. Tamar, what's your check-in?
My check-in is, you know, overall things are going well. I have a son who's about to be 10 with ADHD, and I have most likely ADD myself. I think the biggest thing is just tolerating mistakes, my mistakes, his mistakes, and being kind to myself. And, like, it's okay. It's not the biggest deal. That's on my end. For him, I don't know, I'd like him to I'm trying to really get him to stop and think what the consequences of his impulsive behaviors might be before he actually carries them out. And we just started this plan. You know, I have that marble jar, and the kids get the marbles for doing something that they don't get asked to do, but they do it anyway, like throwing away their plate or whatever it is. So we have just told him yesterday that if he tells us something that he was planning on doing but holds himself back from doing it, that will earn him a marble as well. And several times this morning, you know, he did earn more marbles for his jar because, you know, he said he was going to pour too much in his cup and spill it all over the place, or he was going to do something to his sister, but he didn't do it. So that seems to be going well so far. I mean, it's only been a day, but.
So what are you most anxious about breaking down in that?
You know, just have to see it work. I mean, because I see the alternative. I see that, you know, when he doesn't think about what he's doing and he does things that are dangerous, either dangerous or just downright stupid. You know, yesterday he's like, I'm going to jump out the window. So he disengaged the child locks, opened up the window, no screen, no nothing, sticking his head halfway out the window, we're on the second floor. You know, you just need to mess up and you'll fall out. So it's just, I'm scared sometimes, you know, he does really stupid, dangerous things because he's so impulsive, and it's that those 40 minutes until the meds kick in are horrible.
Well, and I think that that's the piece of it is that I was just talking to a client about this morning. There's this fine line between knowing that there's some kind of clowning going around, and then the other is kind of, the other end of the spectrum is actual danger and fear, because he's so impulsive, and how do you know where he's at in the spectrum, and how do you kind of keep everybody safe and moving forward? How do you feel about how you handled it?
I mean, I think I did okay. I mean, at first I was just waiting for him to, like, figure it out on his own, but with something that's dangerous like that, I can't. You know, I did have to step in and say, you know, you need to close the window right now. That's not a good idea. Those mornings are really, really tough for him. He just has no impulse control. But I think now that we're trying to reinforce and reward his stopping and thinking for a moment, we'll see how that goes. I mean, I hope it goes well. It's just, I dread the mornings. Like, I can't even get into the shower because I don't know what he's going to do.
Well, and so it's frustrating because you feel kind of paralyzed and controlled by it, but at the same time, you can see that it's moving forward. You're rewarding the favorable action, which is, you know, what you feel like is the right way to go, and, you know, it'll give you some leverage and he'll have some motivation, and it's, you know, how do you handle those mornings? And I don't know whether there's another activate the brain sort of something to kind of keep him, you know, to get his get some dopamine first thing, you know, so that he's got a little bit more management in that early morning time frame or what. But, you know, just challenge you to be a little curious, and it'll be interesting to see where you go with this with today's topic tomorrow. Is this where you want to take aim?
Sure.
Okay, so to get specific for me, what is it helping him to manage his impulse control in the morning? Is it specifically, is there something more specific than that?
I mean, it's more like, yeah, handling impulse control in the morning and, you know, preventing danger at the same time.
Okay.
You know, I have to really, like, take a step back, which is, you know, I was talking to Elaine about this last week. Like, is what he's doing inherently awful? No. You know, last week he was making a toilet paper mummy. No, it's not inherently bad. It's just that's not what I bought the toilet paper for. It's wasteful to me. But it's not bad. You know, but something like hanging out the window can be very potentially dangerous. So I have to just kind of, like, weigh what he's doing and see how bad it is and what the potential dangers are, and I wish he would do the same.
Yeah, and the other thing that kind of comes up for me tomorrow is that it's about managing your own triggers, right? So it's like, if it triggers a value of waste, you know, if he's messing with the toilet paper and it's like, you know, you have a strong value about being economical or not wasting things, the risk is that you're going to get triggered. If you see that he's doing something and you perceive it as dangerous, you're likely to go into fight or flight mode. And so part of this is just really noticing your own triggers and paying attention to, okay, do I have the ability to figure out whether this is, I want to let this go or whether I want to tackle this because you're so triggered. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, yeah. That's right on target.
Yeah, and so that kind of takes me back. I was thinking what Terry was saying about letting things go, one of the things we talk about, Terry, a lot is managing our own triggers and the fact that when we get triggered and something pushes our buttons, we tend to go into fight or flight. And the part of us that can really problem solve and weigh options and figure out how we really want to handle something doesn't always, we don't have connection to that. We end up in kind of, I call it search and destroy mode, where we're like, okay, I got to fix this. I got to change this. This has to stop. And so I just kind of tie that back to what you were saying about letting go. Let me go back to you, Terry, for a second.
Yeah.
So taking aim is a tool that we use at the very beginning to get really specific on one challenge area. As parents of ADD kids, we've got lots and lots of things that challenge us. And what I want you to do is to kind of pick one area, and it could be something you've already mentioned. It could be something completely different. But it's just the idea is, you know, get your brain around one particular challenge as we learn a new tool today. So where do you think you might want to take aim?
Okay, well, maybe you can help me put this into clearer focus, but my biggest challenge with him is knowing that he's not handing in assignments and then managing my anxiety around that because I know the consequences. And so, how much do I intervene and how little do I intervene? I have the 504 in place. I will be talking to the teachers today, and they're supposed to check in with him, and he's got a week to hand in late stuff. But, my former counselor for my son wanted me to check daily and do rewards and takeaway system, you know, and it was constant micromanaging, and it was emotionally exhausting for me. So, and I wasn't good at the follow through, and I resisted some of it because it was like too much. So my thing is how do I manage knowing that he is failing in classes or, you know, getting Fs, and that is my trigger, because when I grew up, I had, you know, screaming at the table if I got a C. So, you know, my mother had borderline personality disorder, which is, you know, has it, and she's, you know, it was very difficult. So I have lots of anxiety around, grades lower than a B, because growing up, my brothers especially, you know, it was like a huge deal. If I got a B, you know, could you have gotten an A? It was like this perfection thing. So I have my own issues around that. So then when he gets F, I'm like, oh, my God, the world's going to fall apart, you know. He's going to end up in the street, you know, and I catastrophize and I worry. So my biggest trigger is that. And how do I, you know, what, you know, when do I, can, when I can say, well, he's, everything is in place, and, you know, how do I make sure that I'm okay with what's in place and then let go of that anxiety, you know? My part of it is I'm not confident that the system is all in place so that I can stand back and let it happen, you know? And I don't know
right,
how
so
much
it feels,
it's involved.
Yeah, it feels like kind of like a chicken and the egg sort of thing, right, Terry? Because
my
original thought was, well, you're really kind of taking aim on two pieces of it. One is getting a process in place with him to get his assignments followed through and turned in. And then the other is managing your own anxiety about it. And so,
right.
You know, when you think about, so let me just tell you what today's topic is. And it's humor.
Mm-hmm.
So when I say that, which area do you think you want to tackle first? Do you want to tackle the homework side of it, or do you want to tackle your mindset side of it?
I think the homework part, because I think I can work on the mindset, you know, thing. I have done a lot of work around that, and I'm continuing to do that. So I would say that the homework, I just want to, I just want to be confident in what's in place, or if there's something missing, to get it there, you know. I'm totally confident in my own abilities, you know, pretty, I mean, 90% confident in my own abilities to do things, but I'm not confident in my son's abilities to do things. And I think that I project that onto him. So I don't want to do that anymore. So there's, you know, so there's that.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. So what you're focusing in on is how much, when I use the word scaffolding, does that make sense? That's like how much support
yeah.
you put in place. In terms of
yes,
helping him to follow up and make sure he's got assignment. Okay, good. All right. So as I mentioned, today's topic, let me just double check and make sure nobody else, did anybody else join us? No. Okay. So the topic today and tomorrow, I don't know if you've got your workbook or not.
Yeah, I have it here.
Okay, great. So, and Terry, did you found it and printed it out, I think you said?
Yes, the humor session 17,
yep.
I have it.
Yeah, session 17.
Yep.
So let me just talk a little bit about humor because this is one of those things that either parents will tell me that it either comes completely naturally to them and they use it all the time, or parents tell me, oh my gosh, I'm too stressed out and this isn't my nature. I'm not a funny person, which I actually happen to be in that category personally. So, but humor is a great, great, great tool, and it really can be a very important tool. It's when we talk about motivating the ADHD brain, and this is true for either ADHD kids or adults, there's really kind of five areas that we talk about as key motivators. Urgency, meaning something's, you know, there's a deadline, it needs to be done quickly. Interest, in meaning like I'm really, really interested in it. Novelty means it's brand new, it's fresh, this is cool. Competition, and then humor or playfulness. And so okay. it can be a really great tool to use for our kids if we're trying to find a way to motivate them to do work that their brain doesn't, that their brain maybe isn't engaging in as easily. The other thing that humor really does well is to break the energy. And so a lot of times if we're feeling frustrated or our kids have emotional intensity, and I don't know, you know, a lot of our parents have kids with really intense emotion, either because they're teenagers and they're hormonal or because they're ADD or a combination of the two. And so, you know, using humor as a way to kind of break the energy as a trigger manager, you know, so it's kind of like, okay, how can I find a way to make a little bit light of the situation that feels really intense can really be helpful as we're working with our kids. It's something we don't always tend to go to because, as I mentioned earlier, we tend to, you know, if we get really frustrated about something, we get really anxious about something, we tend to go into, you know, search and destroy, fight or flight mode. The part of us that remembers that, oh, wait, if I made a little light of this situation, it might get us through it easier. We get really intense, right? Because the tendency is when we're triggered, we get really intense. And so remembering to use humor is important. And so having a tool that you'll use for yourself to remember to use this tool might be an important piece of it. The other thing we like to share around this is that we have to be very careful because a lot of times the humor can be misinterpreted. So sometimes if we say something in light, our kids, particularly if they're already triggered, might take it as an attack. They might take it as they might not take sarcasm well. We have to be very careful from an energy perspective that we not, you know, kind of make something funny when we're kind of actually really seriously frustrated about something, and so that our kids get the fact that we're actually not being positive, that we're being, you know, just kind of a backward sort of way of being critical. But humor can be a great, great tool to use in a lot of different situations. So I'm curious for the two of you guys, what where does the role of humor come in your family?
I can say that my biggest concern is I know that kids don't get sarcasm, but I know that I go there automatically, and you know they don't get it, and I wish I didn't do that. You know, like thanks a lot, like thanks for, you know, I'll say something like thanks a lot, thanks for wasting my soup or whatever. Like my son took three bowls of soup yesterday and like poured the third bowl and, you know, finished my entire supply of soup and ate one bite, and like I had to throw the whole thing out. You know, thanks, I'm glad I spent the time making that. But it's my frustration, and then it just comes out badly.
Right, so it sounds like it's a coping mechanism, Tamara, is that the sarcasm is a way of letting go of the energy of the frustration. So if you can say something and verbalize it, you get it out of your head, you get it out of your body. Is that right?
Yeah, but it's not nice the way I'm saying it.
Right. So the question I would ask you is, what could you do? So the goal here is to kind of clear the frustration. What could you do instead of the sarcasm to kind of get that frustration out of you, out somehow?
I mean, I feel like he should know that he did something that upset me. So I can maybe say, you know, you took more than you needed, and now other people are not going to have something very, you know, practical.
Yeah, so you want to make sure that you're educating on some level. But Philip, I'm going to ask you a question. How often have you had a situation where he's been wasteful and you've educated him?
I mean, I guess it happens pretty often.
Yeah, so I guess the question is, at some point, I'm wondering if there's diminishing does educating him have diminishing returns? And is it really about educating him, or is it really about understanding that this is a completely impulsive behavior and that the education may or may not be adding value, but it may be detracting? I mean, I don't know how to ask that, but it's kind of like, is the education helping, I guess, is the underlying question.
I mean, if I don't say anything, he's not going to know at all. He's just going to, you know, use up all the tape and use up all the toilet paper for mommy. You know, that's the thing. Like, I feel like because he's so impulsive, he's not going to that place of, oh, wait, mommy bought this for something else.
So I guess that's the question. So let's go back tomorrow. What's a realistic expectation for your impulsive kid?
They want to play. They're being creative.
Great. So is it realistic that at his stage of development, is it realistic that he's going to often take that pause and go, oh, wait, this is wasteful?
No.
Okay. And it's unfortunate because it's important to you, and it's like, and it makes you thinking crazy when he wastes stuff. And yet, on the other hand, you can see how impulsive he is and that it makes perfect sense that he just used up an entire roll of toilet paper because he was just being fun and creative. Mm-hmm. So what's your real goal?
I don't know if my real goal is... My real goal is unrealistic. I think my real goal is to cut the impulsivity. You know, I just wish it wasn't this way, and I fight it, and then it triggers me for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's hard because it just makes you crazy because it's like, when is he going to grow up and figure this out? I don't have the energy for this, right? It wears you out, and it pushes your buttons, and it makes you stinking crazy.
I mean, I even had my 6-year-old say to me, is he going to always be like this? Yeah.
So if you were gonna add humor into this situation tomorrow, how might it help?
I honestly don't use humor that often, and I wouldn't even know how to begin.
Yeah.
If I try to use humor, it comes out as sarcasm, so I don't really know how to use humor in an appropriate fashion.
Yeah, because the thing is that what I'm hearing is two things. Is that you know, it's going to be hard for you to let go of educating because it's like you want to make sure that he's aware of the fact that what he's doing, yes, you understand that it's impulsive, but you want to also make sure that he's aware of the fact that it's a challenge for you and it's not okay for you. So if you were going to... You know, I guess the question is, you know, how could you make light of this? Could you have a signal or a phrase that you use where it's like, okay, we're having one of those impulsive moments. I mean, maybe it's, I don't know, is there an impulsive superhero? And you can say it's like one of those Batman moments, and Batman's not impulsive, but it, you know, it's just kind of trying to figure out if there's a way to just kind of say, well, we're being impulsive again. What do we do? What do we, you know, what do we need to do when we're impulsive? Well, Batman always thinks first before he acts, you know. And so then you're helping him to remember to think before he acts. And I'm completely making that up, Tamar, but I'm wondering whether there's anything in that that stands out for you.
I mean, I did try to set up a code word, and I used it, like, once because I'm my own inconsistent person. He loves Lego, so like, oh, when I say the word Lego, it means that you have to stop and think and try to realize what you're doing. But I don't know that, then I never use it again.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the thing, is that my gut's telling me that this is about figuring out first. This is the conversation I was having with Terry. It's like, do you deal with the anxiety and the frustration first, or do you deal with the process first? And I'm wondering whether the fact that it goes to sarcasm so much is an indicator that your first focus needs to be, okay, how do I take a deep breath here, manage my own trigger, and move to problem solving instead of fight or flight? Does that resonate?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so how could you make light of your own trigger for yourself? This may not be something you do out loud with him, but it's kind of like, you know, let me ask a question first, Tamar. Where do you stand in terms of judging your own triggers? Do you get mad at yourself when you get triggered, or do you laugh it off? Do you just know it's part of you? What's your relationship with triggered Tamar?
Well, I can say one thing. I get triggered easily.
Yep.
And it's not always pretty. I will usually, you know, snap at the next person, whether it's my husband or my kids or whatever, when I feel anxious or triggered. I kind of like pass it along is what I'm saying.
Okay, so you've got a really short fuse, and then when you think about it after the fact, after it happens, what's your feeling about it?
That anxiety wasn't worth all that.
Okay. So you're kind of we got through it. Was it really worth it? You know, so it's kind of like, okay, you can see how it's not, how it's getting in the way is kind of where I think it sounds like you're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you're in that moment and your buttons start to get triggered, what's your go-to trigger management tool?
I mean, I try to take a few deep breaths, and I try to say, you know, the thing that Elaine has on her necklace, you know, this too shall pass. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, this is not earth shattering. Whatever
okay.
It is, you know. So
you've got that. So what, on a scale of 1 to 10, how successful are you at using that trigger management tool on a day-to-day basis?
About half the time, maybe a little more.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So what's different in those times where it's harder for you?
I definitely get caught up in the, what were you thinking? And, you know, now I have to deal with this mess and, you know, that kind of thing. I get caught up in those frustrations.
So the frustration takes over. So does it tend to be a certain time of the day, certain mindset space? Is it when you're more tired? Is it when you're more, I mean, what do you notice if you're kind of looking at 30,000 feet?
I mean, it's definitely more apparent when I'm anxious myself, whether it's preparing for the Sabbath and there's a lot to do, or you know, I'm trying to get the kids moving in the morning, and this one spills, and this one this, and, like, I can't deal with so much, and I get overwhelmed.
Yeah. So you've got a lot of things going on, and a normal day, it's a challenge for you, but when things are really rushed in the morning or when you're preparing for Sabbath, I mean, it sounds like those are times where you're already, I got to get this done, I got to get that done. And so your fuse is shorter. And that's really true with all of us. It's like we're already kind of triggered, and so that it's almost like the buttons that get pushed get bigger, right? So So the question is, you know, is it about practicing noticing your triggers when things are a little bit more calm, so that when things get overwhelmed, you are more aware of them? Or is it about a reminder in the moment that you could use, that you just need to be more aware of when in those busy times?
I mean, I think it's both. I think it's, I need, you know, just like I'm asking my son to take a step back and think before he does something impulsive, I need to take a step back and say, you know, yes, I'm feeling triggered, yes, I'm feeling anxious, but does this situation warrant this much anxiety?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Part of what I'm sensing from you, Tamara, is that part of this is about just the way that you release your frustration, and that you tend to release it verbally. That's where the sarcasm shows up. And so the question is there something you can say in your head to yourself, or something you can do, like blowing out a puff of air, that, you know, kind of will help with your trigger management, that it's like, okay, I'm releasing this. Not only am I taking a deep breath, but I'm releasing some of this frustration more from a physical perspective, because it feels like that might be important here. Does that resonate at all?
It does, but I haven't really explored that before.
Yeah, because I think it's maybe something to play with. It's kind of like, you know, is there something else you could say instead of, you know, it's kind of like, do you say something in your head that lets you get rid of the energy, or do you say, you know, like I live in the South, right? So one of the things that people tend to say tongue in cheek is, you know, bless her heart, which is kind of like, it's meant to be a blessing, but it's also, you're making me stinking crazy. You know, but it's something that you can say that will feel less charged than the sarcasm, but will allow you to release some of the frustration.
Oh, I see. Something like, oh, God bless him, you know?
Yeah, exactly. God bless him, you know? Here we go again. Or, you know, it's like, and the reality is that these are steps for you tomorrow, because I think that you're so frustrated that it's hard to get to humor. And so if you can get to, okay, here we go again, that's a perfect step before the next one, which is, isn't this crazy? Here we are again.
Mm-hmm.
How funny is this? We're back here where we always are.
I know something that my mother says is, you know, gotta love him.
Well, and then that's the thing. It's like, if you can say that with a sense of humor, if you can say that with some laughter, it might be a good energy shift.
Mm-hmm.
So, Terry, I'm curious, has anything kind of come up for you as Tamara and I were talking?
Yeah, I was just thinking, what could she, you know, like, what could she say to diffuse it? And I don't know if he does that with the toilet paper often, but you could, you know, say something around the toilet paper, like, you know, like, oh, you know, we're gonna need a van to get enough toilet paper to keep replacing the roll, or something, you know, just kind of something funny about, you know, just that this is the focus, you know, that the toilet paper roll is constantly being used up or whatever. So something maybe around that, I don't know. Like, I know for me, my thing is the assignments aren't handed in, and he would say, yeah, I handed in, and I would check a week later, they're still not handed in, you know. And I'm like, it's crazy making, because I don't understand why he won't do it. So I was thinking, for me, a humor thing I could say is like, you know, if I find out didn't hand in that assignment, then I could say something, boy, that assignment is really afraid to go in the basket. I can see your backpack shivering from fear, from your papers, you know, so too afraid to get in there, I guess, or something. I don't know. I was just thinking, what else could I, you know, because I just get so incensed about it, you know, like, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. So,
yeah.
But also part of when she was talking is about the expectations. I get stuck in this loop where it's just like the insanity loop, and I have to jump out of it sometimes and say, wait a minute, you know, I had to lower my expectations and say, okay, he is not going to be ABs right now. You know, he has a potential, he's smart enough, but it's about his organization and his fears. So if I see an F, okay, well, we can deal with that. You know, if I see a D, we can deal with that. If I see a C, we can deal with that. That's fine, you know. It's just that I take some of the expectations off the table a little bit and know that he's not going to die from an F. It's not going to kill him.
Yeah.
So that's something that's helped me.
Yes, your intuition is great, Terry, because that's actually one of the things we talk about. The language we use is shifting expectations. And so, you know, that is the question I asked Tamar, and that's the same question for you, is what's a realistic expectation for your son at the level he is developmentally? We know that, you know, our kids are delayed. They have some executive function challenges. They have a hard time with organization and in working memory, which is part of what it takes to turn assignments in. I mean, it's all kinds of moving pieces around turning homework in and that sort of stuff. And so, you know, it's part of this is having the right expectation, and then the other is kind of staying, keeping your sense of humor about it. And so I loved your sort of, you know, a homework assignment that's afraid to be turned in. It's just, you know.
I know, it's taking in the backpack.
But what you're describing is how do you shift your own energy in a way that, you know, you're highlighting for your kids, and both of you said this beautifully. It's like, I don't want to not say something. I don't want to sound sarcastic because I don't want them to know that I'm judging, but it's like, we've got to figure this out. What can we do? You know, there's still a challenge here that exists, but it's a problem to be solved rather than a crisis to be fixed.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. Problem to be solved. Okay. Yeah. So it's just, it's looking at it in more of a realistic perspective. It's a problem to be solved. The problem for Mason is he doesn't turn in his assignments. About, 25 to 30% of his assignments aren't turned in. So that's the problem. It's not a catastrophe. But it, you know, it does cause problems.
Well, and I think that the other thing, Terry, for you, that obviously this is part of what you're going to work on through this program is, you know, whose problem is it? You know, is it yours or is it his? And it's difficult when you've been micromanaging it. It feels like our problem, right? And so it's kind of like, but what you're trying to do is a lot of times our kids don't even, they don't feel it as a problem. So that's where motivation can come in, is kind of like helping them to see and have value, you know, and value solving the problem. And so I think that that's the question, you know, Tamar, I'm going to go back to Tamar for a second. It's like, you know, is there some way to get some buy-in from him to solve the problem, or is it just that developmentally he's not there yet and it's a matter of waiting?
I mean, I think part of it he can learn to do, you know, for example, I was just thinking this now, when my kids used to, you know, be a little younger and, like, there were constant spills at the table and it would really trigger me. I don't know why, but it would really trigger me. And they were very funny. They would, like, rate the spill with a number. Oh, 25 spills, 36 spills. And I'm like, get the paper towel. Don't just sit there and rate the spill, you know. But I think now I've shifted to, okay, what are you going to do about it? You know, put the ball in their court. Okay, so you spilled, and I try to maintain composure. Like, it's just orange juice, it's just whatever. And at the same time, let them solve the problem.
Yeah. So when Tamar, I'm trying to remember back to the lesson on failing forward. Where do you, what's your comfort level with failure?
Oh.
But theirs are mine.
Either one.
For me, I hate it. I hate it for me. I'm very hard on myself, and there's no room for error, but at the same time, I, like, hold other people to high expectations that they can't keep up to either, and then, you know, I get disappointed, they get frustrated, they can't meet my expectations. It's not a good...
Yeah. Well, and so I think that's something to look at. So There's some, have I used the word gremlins before with you? Which, you know, it's like that voice in your head. It's like it's hard when you've got the failure is such a scary thing for you. It's really difficult I can imagine when you've got kids that are accident prone or, you know, impulsive, it's got to be really hard not to be walking around triggered all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So, I don't know, the thing that popped into my head, I love the idea of, like, counting the number of spills. That made me laugh. But and I'm sure it makes you frustrated. And the thing that kind of popped into my head, I don't know if you guys watch movies or not, but there's this cool I don't know, it was a Pixar movie. It was a cartoon called Meet the Robinsons. It was, I don't know how many years ago it was, probably 10 years ago. And their whole thing was, hooray, you failed. And they like really, he was an inventor. And it was like the whole idea was that, you know, you've got to make mistakes in order to have successes. And it just is a really great sort of mindset shift kids thing around failure that it just kind of popped into my head tomorrow. It may or may not be appealing to you, but I know you've got younger kids, so I thought I would share it.
Oh, that sounds really, they like the Pixar stuff, and they, I'm sure that, you know, everybody needs to see that, something like that. You know, we got to, you know, we'll have one success in school, but then we'll get an email the same day from a different teacher, you know, your son failed a test, and now he has to retake it, and, you know.
Yeah. So we're dancing all over the place. We're talking about expectations. We're talking about failing forward. Isn't it funny how we just kind of like all of the tools kind of show up in any one call? So Terry, you gave an example of humor. Tamara, it sounds like humor might be just more lightheartedness than actual funniness for you. It might be a good kind of in-between step. But you might ask your kids, you know, it's like what can we do when we get too serious? What's, you know, maybe it's just about a practice of less seriousness. And when, you know, when everybody starts to get really serious in the household, is there a code word or is there something you could do? Or, you know, everybody starts laughing out loud or something that just kind of keeps things at a little bit lighter energy. Could you see how that could help, you know, in those moments like morning time or, you know, when you're all busy getting ready for something? That would help kind of keep the energy lighter.
Yeah, I can see how that can help. I don't know. I'm like a little not hesitant to use it, but kind of like, is this really going to work? You know.
Well, I don't know. For me, I'm thinking that, you know, because I lose my temper, I get in that fight or flight, and I get frustrated and I lose it. So I'm wondering if I could have my son say, okay, next time I lose it, it's going to happen. I want you to, you know, say, you know, do this, like, make a sign or whatever, like, you know, to let me know that you're shutting down, that this is happening. And then it'll wake me out of my amygdala, you know, I'm sitting in my amygdala. So make a sign and do something to stop me, you know. Is that reasonable to do?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think that's the thing you need to just watch whenever somebody's triggered, whether it's you or him. Is how are you gonna react when he does that? And is it gonna throw you even more over the deep end, or are you gonna be like, okay, yeah, he's letting me know? Because I know that for a lot of people, particularly if they try to do that with their kid and their kid is triggered and then they try to do something fun and light, it could trigger them further. That's just one thing to pay attention to is, you know, how is the person who's triggered gonna receive that?
Yeah, okay.
Cool. All right, so let's do any other kind of questions or ideas around this before we do our wrap-up.
I think it's interesting that the humor really could be internal. I don't have to even share it, but it could be to lighten my frustration and mood and then enable me to, you know, better deal with the situation at hand.
Well, that's the reality. I mean, maybe it's shifting the sarcasm from external to internal tomorrow because, I mean, it is, if it's a way of shifting your energy, that might be the next step. And eventually you might, you know, you might step past that or you might stay there. It's just a matter of figuring out how, if sarcasm is an issue for you because it's the way that you tend to get when you get triggered, finding a way to shift that might be a great step for you.
Okay.
All right. So let's do our wrap up. So we got four questions. What did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how can I set myself up with this action? So take just a few minutes, jot down some notes, and I would love to hear from both of you what you most came out of this conversation with.
Okay. I finished mine. Okay, so the first one would be, my focus would be missing homework assignments. That's the thing I paid most attention on today, like the thing that's most relevant at this moment. So my frustration around that. And the clarity or takeaway is that I love that humor can be internal. I can, instead of lashing out, I can, you know, take a breath and say, you know, God will love them, or, you know, this too shall pass, or whatever, you know. To have some kind of internal thing that can stop me from going in too much into the emotion and losing it, because I can't do anything when I'm there. And then an action step could be asking my son to give me a signal when I'm angry, when he's shutting down, you know, and that will be like, oh, it's happening, you know, I need to back off. And then I can set myself up for success by, you know, becoming aware of the triggers, like, you know, say, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going to look at his assignments, and whatever I find there, it's okay. You know, whatever I see, it's okay. We'll just deal with it, you know, as we get it. Or if I, you know, if I talk to him and I find out that something happened and would upset me, you know, that to know that I can step back and internalize some of the thoughts and slow myself down instead of going right into the reaction. And if I do go into the reaction, then I know that he will help stop it by letting me know. So that, I mean, it seems like somewhat of a plan anyway.
Cool. All right. So Tamara, what about you?
Right. So what did I focus on? I focused on the importance of catching myself feeling triggered and how to do it. My clarity or takeaway was that humor can be internal. A realistic action step is asking the kids to solve the problem rather than solving it myself for them. You know, they have to get the paper towels, they have to clean up, they have to figure out what to do. And setting myself up, I didn't do that one yet. I mean, I think the biggest thing is just to be patient with myself.
Hmm. You know, that's awesome. So what would that be? I mean, if you're going to be more patient with yourself, what would that look like?
I guess, you know, afterwards say, wow, I guess I didn't really handle that up well, but that's okay, you know. Like, review how I handled the situation and see if it could be done better next time.
So just being more analytical than judgy. Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's an opportunity. So every time something turns out the way that you don't want it to, instead of being a failure, it's more of an opportunity to grow and
mm-hmm.
learn. Okay. How does that subtle shift help you?
It takes away the catastrophizing. It takes away the, hopefully, some of the frustration, like, you know, things happen and they're not catastrophic. And I know that I go there very easily that, you know, this is terrible. It was funny. I was taking my car to get a car wash, and I had trouble getting into that little groove that you have to put your tire into because there was no one there to guide me. And when I talked about it, I said, oh my gosh, that was such a disaster. Like, the whole car was like creaking and screeching as I'm trying to get it on. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm breaking in my car. And every time my daughter mentions going to there with me, she says, that was a disaster. Like, she totally paints it the way I painted it. And it wasn't a disaster, you know? It was annoying, but like, okay, so I had trouble getting into the thing, you know?
Well, and so this is the value. So go back to the trigger management piece tomorrow, because this is what happens, is that if you don't break the trigger, you go to fight or flight, and it's automatically, it's this crisis situation. If you can find a way to break the trigger, if you take a deep breath, you can choose to figure out, is this a crisis or is this not a crisis? If it's not a crisis, then how do I want to handle it? And that's really what you're trying to do with the trigger management, is just to get to a place where you can even go, wait, is this an emergency or not?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, cool. So what do you want to take away as concrete action?
Um, I think using one of those statements like, gotta love them, or, you know, something like that, or this too shall pass, in my head would be helpful.
And that'll help you manage the sarcasm. And then I heard you say, you know, doing more to have them take responsibility instead of jumping in and fixing it might help as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. All right, ladies, great call today. Terry, it's great to get to know you a little bit. And
thanks.
We are meeting again in 2 weeks. And tomorrow you're going to see some emails over the next couple of weeks. It's obvious we're doing something different. We're launching a 12-month version of PSS, and we're going to encourage all the folks that are just finishing up with the school year version of it to switch over and jump in to them to another year. And so you'll see an email about renewing and what that would entail and that sort of stuff. So look for that in your email.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Denise. Take care.
All right. Take care. Bye.
I have one, Diane?
Yeah, absolutely.
Hello? I have one question. Can you send me that article when your kids say, I got it?
Yes, I can. Absolutely. And I'm going to send, yes, I will. Absolutely.
Okay, great. I just wanted to remind you that that sounds really good because that happens a lot.
All right, Terry.
So,
take care.
Yep, you too. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.